Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host, and we're going to talk about Genesis. Not only Genesis, but the Genesis code. It's the key to unlocking hidden genius. Don't we want that? And let's find out how to do it by talking to the author of the book, The Genesis Code, Glenda Lee Hoffman. Glenda Lee, welcome.
Hi, Peter. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so glad you could join and talk about this wonderful book. It's so rich with dynamic truth. And I really love the way that you've come about it through the dynamics of your own life and your opportunities to meet with interesting people, especially as a child.
Oh, right, yeah.
And that was fascinating that you were brought into a vision, and in that vision you were spoken to by a very amazing person.
My sense of humor has kicked in as I've gotten older, so I like to say, you know, Moses talked to a bush. I just talked to a fire.
All right. Sitting on a rock.
Yeah. Actually, I was in a library.
Okay.
He was sitting on a rock. I was in a library.
Right.
But 2,500 years apart.
Yep. And you were brought into this as an 11-year-old child, so you were quite innocent.
I figured that out when I was in my 40s. When I looked back on it, I realized that I still had this absolute sense of things. I didn't have the consciousness to have gray areas. So to me, at that point, at 11, things were either good or bad. They were either right or wrong. And I remember that was the kind of hallmark of innocence. I didn't have these gray areas in my mind yet.
Right.
So when I had that experience, I used to say afterwards, it was better than Superman, you know, because I was still a kid, basically,
right.
And yet I was right on the cusp of puberty. And I've since found out that a lot of people have these kinds of experiences then.
And many of them just forget about them and think of them as
well,
a dream.
Well, I think that happens to us, like I did.
Yeah.
I forgot about mine. I think especially the situation I was in, my parents had just moved from a very small town to a huge urban center after that when I was 13, and I was confronted with this amazingly complex world, especially socially, and I had no friends, and I was really thrust into it, and my parents basically disappeared into their jobs. So we left a tiny, I mean, the town I lived in was less than 2,000 people when I was as a child. And it was filled with friends and family. My mother came from a huge family. She had 10 brothers and sisters. And I had a lot of cousins, and we spent many hours together. I had lots of friends. I could ride around my whole town on my bicycle
You're painting a very nice picture, but actually you had a lot of limitation around you that you realized.
Yeah, I did. I had a lot of angst and anxiety, and my parents were educated, but they weren't affectionate or even psychologically understanding, and it's taken me a lifetime to really work through all that. You know, I got spanked and hit and punished a lot as a child for things I didn't really understand, and only as an adult do I realize that it was my parents' stress that they were acting out on me. Of course, as a child, you always take that personally.
Well, in the last century, children, I think, were less wise than they are today, even though life is really tough. I'm really impressed with a lot of children nowadays. But in those days, at least for me, we were just in it and dealing with all the craziness of life and hurt a lot and really damaged in many ways going into our adulthood. And I always say the reason we choose to be adults in life, that we, you know, this is a journey of being children and then adults, is that we choose adults so we could heal our childhood.
Well, that's what Harville Hendricks says. His have you ever read anything about him?
Yes, sure.
Yeah, that is imago therapy.
Uh-huh.
We choose our partner as someone who can help us complete our childhood. I have no idea if it's really true. I know I was able to complete my childhood with my partner, through him, with the help of Harville Hendricks. We went to one of his workshops.
Good. Well,
we our culture is very predatory and punishment oriented.
Right.
And we're still in it, although a lot of us have given a lot of energy to neutralizing those patterns. And so we have raised our own children differently.
Sure. But I always say that, you know, this is a toxic planet, and we come here to grow our light through the suffering that we undertake. And then hopefully do a better and better job, and we're moving into an evolutionary time where I think we all will be smarter. And I think your book, The Genesis Code, can help people understand why we're stuck. And there really is a deeper understanding to it if you actually look at Genesis in the Bible.
Isn't that amazing? The word Genesis means to begin again.
Right, and we need
to. And that's exactly what the story, when you really understand what it's saying, that's exactly what it's saying. Uh-huh. Let's begin again.
And the issue is, are we capable of it or not? Do we understand the truths that you speak about in your book that are based on the Kabbalah, based on the hidden mysteries of the alphabet, of the Hebrew alphabet? And it's fascinating to see that and to understand the dynamics of that. And you came into that quite a while ago, and you've spent years actually focused on contemplating these Hebrew letters to understand their deeper meaning, so then you can interpret the words of Genesis even better.
Yeah, that was an interesting process. I want to point out to your listeners, first of all, that to become aware, you don't have to learn the Kabbalah, because it's very difficult. The Kabbalah is one path, but there are so many. There are an infinite number of paths. So I want to make that disclaimer, first of all. Second of all, I do want to say, if you're driven, like I was, the Kabbalah is a great path, because it never ends, like growth itself. It simply never ends. There's always something new there. And every time I go back to it, I find something new. It's just amazing. The Kabbalah is a teaching about energy. And that's what the universe consists of. Energy in different configurations. Matter is just energy in a configuration of atoms that have a beginning and an end. That's the only difference that makes matter different than energy. Energy goes on forever. Matter has a beginning and an end. And yet, the beginning of matter is created out of this energy stew that is infinite and eternal. And then when matter dies, it goes back into the energy stew that's infinite and eternal.
Well, I love about the book is that you really talk about the dynamics of how energy manifests in life in different forms that it takes. And you use the Hebrew alphabet to demonstrate these different forms. And then you break it down. And it's so beautiful to understand that, because you come to some basic truths that are found in the Garden of Eden between Adam and Eve. And I want to get into that. There's so much to chew on from your book. It's just fantastic. And I think everybody should be grabbing this book and really being in the experience of understanding life so much deeper and better, because this is the form that life takes, and you reveal the reasons why we're stuck. You reveal the reasons why there's so much going on in this planet that isn't working, and what needs to happen in order for it to work. And so
yeah.
you really have solutions also.
Well, I'm a very practical person.
Mm-hmm.
And my conclusion is that what Genesis taught me, what the Kabbalah taught me, is that this, what we call spiritual information, is really just practical. Everybody wants to be happy. Everybody wants to be fulfilled. What's confusing is how we get from confusion and anxiety and depression to happiness and fulfillment.
Well,
that's the part that isn't clear, and that's the part that Genesis made clear to me.
Right. And
we have to grow and expand our awareness so that we understand how energy works and how we can make it work for us.
Exactly, and there are formulations for that based on the alphabet. And it's so interesting how the alphabet shows us where the energy is to make things happen, and then to balance things, to hold things back. And if we understand that, you know, then we can allow it to all work. I do believe that spirit and science are one, that everything is scientific. We just don't know the formulas yet.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, there's only one reality.
Right.
It's what we're all in. It is reality. Then there's all of our assumptions and beliefs and teachings about reality, which is mostly delusional. What the Kabbalah does is give us a glimpse of reality. It the letters are actually designed, if we study them correctly, properly, they will, because our brain is created by this reality of energy, so it consists of all these patterns of reality and energy, and all the Kabbalah does is present them to us, and if we can put ourselves in the place of getting those patterns presented to ourselves by studying it over and over and over, one of these days, actually, our brain opens up and actually sees it. Oh yeah, that's me. That's what I'm consists of. That's the pattern that works in me.
Okay,
happens.
But I want to say something about that. That really opens up this whole understanding in the book that you have about opening up new neural pathways in the brain through self-reflection, through study, through concentration, focus, and intention. All of a sudden, the brain responds to that and creates new awarenesses. But
yes.
It's not going to do it if we hold on to all the same.
No. No, in fact, the term, the scientific term for growing new neurons is called neurogenesis.
Uh-huh.
So
the Kabbalah all over again.
All over again. The life is... The whole purpose of life is to, according to the Kabbalah, and I witness it, is to create more potential. And the way you create more potential is to create more energy. And out of potential, you create more possibilities. Out of possibilities, you create more potential, more possibilities, more matter. And that's what a seed does. A seed is a container of possibilities and potential. And it is static until we plant it. And the minute we plant it and add water, the seed germinates. And if the conditions are right, those possibilities and potential are realized.
Yes,
and they never stop being realized as long as a seed from the next generation is planted again somewhere,
right?
Either consciously or unconsciously,
and
the brain works the same way.
Society is always trying to lock in these seeds and put them on pedestals and hold the seeds as God rather than the potential of the seed.
Again, that goes back to the major pattern in the Kabbalah is this relationship between the husk and the germ. And we see this in a seed. But what the Kabbalah points out is that the energies of the husk, the static containing outer energies, are always in opposition to the growing, expanding potential energies of the germ. And it's this relationship between these two opposing elements that is at the heart of every living system. That's what the Kabbalah taught me.
Right.
And once I learned how to see how these energies work together, I realized, oh, these kinds of energies are in the psyche. They're in the human psyche. We have this tendency in the human psyche to hold on to something, to make it static, to like you said, put it on a pedestal and worship it, rather than look at the other element, which is expansive, which is growing, which can't even be controlled, in the sense that who can control which direction a vine is going to go,
right,
or how many grapes are going to be in a cluster.
This is
that
the
kind of thing.
Difference between good and evil that you talk about, and this is the way society talks about good and evil.
Yeah,
good and evil are the opposite, actually. So
yeah, and when I broke down the letters, which is Genesis is a coded text at the letter level, and what I did for years was study each letter, not words, but letters. And as I understood the configurations of energies in the letters, the words took on completely different meaning. For instance, for the final 4 months before I had my breakthrough with the Kabbalah, I was studying only one word, and it was the first word of Genesis. It's made up of six letters, Beit Resh Aleph Shin Yod Tav, and it has been translated in the beginning. But what happened when my breakthrough occurred is that, and I didn't even realize this for even years afterwards, because the breakthrough was so enormous. It was like this huge revelation explosion in my brain, is that those six letters describe a seed of energy that was the beginning of the universe. And it was constructed, just like any seed, of three static outer protective elements and three disruptive, growing, expanding elements. And in the midst of that, in the midst of all those six letters, was the possibility of a human creature, a creature like us with a brain that has those same capabilities. So in that first revelation was all these energies put together, and this is how Genesis is constructed. First, it creates this beginning elemental life seed, and then the story expands on that information to describe how the universe evolved through energy and matter, through the interaction of energy and matter, how the earth was formed, how it was first covered with water, then land, then plants, then animals, then human beings. That's the story of evolution in Genesis 1. Then, because this is a story about the outer and inner energies and how they interact, the story jumps into the interior of the human mind and the psyche in Genesis 2, 3, and 4, which is the story of the garden, and it tells the story from inside human consciousness and how these same energies are at work there. And what it revealed to me is that there are huge areas in the brain that are static, that resist change and resist transformation. And the one element that doesn't resist change and is created not to resist change is Eve. She is, her story in Genesis, in the Garden of Eden, she's created specifically to produce change, to introduce change, to germinate change.
Which is why women have to be oppressed.
Well,
yes. That's
well,
evil.
You mean why they
we
have
just
been.
Talked about evil. Evil is the generative action, and Eve represents Genesis. And so all of a sudden, here we have this very powerful, dynamic, creative force that's frightening to the husk. And says,
exactly.
Wait a minute, we can't let this get out of hand. Let's oppress this.
yeah. It's the reaction of the static forces to the dynamic force in consciousness, in the human psyche. And it's because this is what's going on in the brain. In the brain, the static forces are trying to control the dynamic forces. And of course, the ironic thing about all this is that'll never happen.
Right,
that
because
is never ever going to happen.
But
it never happens in reality. It never happens in nature, and it really doesn't happen in the human brain. We just think it does.
It's just that Aleph has to get going, and it will, no matter how much we hold it off. Aleph is the letter A, really, and that's the energy of disruption.
Yes. And what the interesting thing about the words good and evil that I worked and worked and worked and worked by breaking down the letters, what I finally realized is that when Eve eats that apple, which is the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and of course the trees in the brain are its neurons, and this whole story of the garden is taking place inside the human psyche and brain, so that's the only place you're ever going to find a tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You're never going to find it in anybody's garden. You're never going to find those seeds in a hardware store. The only place the tree of the knowledge of good and evil is inside the human brain. This is what she realizes, and she realizes that it's not the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It's the tree of static and dynamic. And when you break down the letters for good and evil, ironically, the word for good is the word for static.
Because we can trust static, we know it's always going to be there.
Yeah,
and so that's what's good about it. You know, be good, don't make any disturbance.
Yeah, yeah. And so, the word for evil is disruption.
Right.
And then the static mind has labeled disruption evil because it disrupts the static state.
Right.
And the static state doesn't like that.
Right. It's like children, when they are in their most creative, can be very disruptive.
Very good analogy.
And
yeah,
we can say they're evil.
Analogy.
These kids are evil.
Yeah.
You know, they're disruptive, but let's not call it generative.
Well, you never know. I mean, out of disruption can come all sorts of generative ideas. And that's where all new technology and all new ideas come from, this energy of disruption. So disruption carries the generative impulse. And what, as human beings, our job is to learn how to discern all that so that we can learn how to use the disruptive energies to generate our future,
but fear,
our new possibility.
Fear takes over, and fear
unless
then represses it.
Fear takes over unless we develop the frontal lobe, which is the only part in the human brain that's actually human, the lobe right behind the forehead, which is the only part of the human body that distinguishes us from those bipedal hominids that came before us. The frontal lobe is the only part of the brain that actually looks into the brain and sees what's going on. It sees the static elements of the other cortexes trying to control the disruptive and energy. And in fact, the lobotomy, that term that got a Nobel Prize back in the 1940s, which was then taken away, the lobotomy came from that idea that we want to control this disruptive element in people. So we're going to lobotomize them.
Give them a frontal lobotomy.
Give them a frontal lobotomy. And I don't want to go into that whole thing, but
right.
the idea was to control this disruptive impulse. And the fact is you can never control this disruptive impulse. What you can do is learn how to use it, because it's there. It's energy. It's generative energy. And it's there for us to use to move into our own path. And the frontal lobe is the only part of the brain that can actually grow neurons that go back to these older static parts of the brain and give them a new pathway to work on, so that instead of being static, they can move with the new generative energy in the brain, and we can heal all of our psychological pain, even our physical pain, by learning how to grow new neurons that make us healthy.
But the problem
instead
is
of which comes making us depressed and anxious.
Right, but which comes first? And, you know, it might take the ability to dive in to see what's going on to build these new pathways. And a lot of society is stuck and doesn't want to grow and learn new things. They just want to hold on to what they've got because they have so much fear. So there needs to be some compelling force, some aleph force needs to come in and disrupt things to the point where we really have to go into that genesis.
Well, and it happens to people all the time. Divorce, and they're usually what we term negative experiences, and yet there's that saying that's been around forever, there's a silver lining in every cloud, and it that points to an attitude we can have. That when bad things happen to us, if we look at them, if we study them, if we meditate on them, we will realize that that was a disruption in our life that gives us the opportunity to look at ourselves.
Right.
And to pay attention and to see what's really going on.
So let's look
so
forward to that.
It's happening all the time.
Right. And you do say in the book, the more that you're willing to live in that, the less disruptive it will feel. I want to, we have to close the show in less than 2 minutes. And this has been so much fun talking with
you. It really has. Thank you, Peter.
Well, I knew we would have fun. That's Genesis for you. And the book is The Genesis Code, The Key to Unlocking Hidden Genius. And your name is Glinda, Glinda Lee, Glinda Lee Hoffman. How can people reach you or find your book or what?
You can find it on Amazon, but you also have to use the subtitle, Your Key to Unlocking Hidden Genius, because there are four other books with the title The Genesis Code. Too bad I didn't check that out before I put the title
or Google
online.
Hoffman, Genesis Code Hoffman.
Right, and then I also have a website, which is www.thegenesiscode.com.
That's great. Glinda Lee, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew. It's such a pleasure talking with you. Maybe we can talk with you again in the future.
It was great fun, Peter, and you had some great insight.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, and have a good morning.
You too. And this is Peter Roth, the host of Energy Stew at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, H-E-A-R-T, river.org, or 212-222-7748. Lots of online and teleclasses going on, all kinds of opportunities to plug in. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.